första nu. Bra. Välkomna till seminariet om vem ska styra över internet. Delar av det här seminariet kommer att hållas på engelska för att Giovanni Seppia, General Manager of Center, pratar inte svenska. Doesn't speak Swedish. We also have some guests from other countries in the audience, so I'll try to do my school English the best I can. And if anyone in the audience wants to put a question, feel free to do it either in Swedish or in English or any other eligible language that you know. This is the running order. We will start with Johan Martin Löf, continue with Jörgen Samuelsson, then continue with Olof Nordling, Giovanni Seppia, and end up with Astrid Dufborg. Each and one has about 10 minutes to do a presentation on their views of the running of the internet and the governance of the internet. And then they will step up here, be a panel, and be open for your questions. And having said that, Johan, senior counsel advisor to the National Post and Telecom Agency, with a vast experience of international telecoms, the floor is yours, and you have about 10 minutes.
Thank you, Olof. You have, by giving a title to this session, indicated that this is an encounter between ICANN, sort of the new world, and the UN and the ITU, which is part of the old world. And you've asked me to trace the origins of this in a somewhat longer perspective. So I'll go over the transition from the telecom to the information society in about 10 minutes. So this is my name. The telecom society has been through two major waves, technological waves, and it's perhaps interesting to remind you that the first service was the telegraph service, which developed into a global text transport service already a century ago. And it taught humankind what an immense value there is in being able to transport messages globally at lightning speed. It also taught humankind the value of international cooperation, so the International Telecom Union, then a telegraph union, was established already in 1865. And it dealt with practical things like addressing tarification priorities and secrecy and reliability. And Mr. Chairman, I should perhaps make a little aside here. In view of today's brouhaha in the international scene, it's perhaps good to remind the audience that a century ago, the international telegraph system was very heavily dominated by the superpower at the time, the British Empire. And the world was to note and take good care in the ensuing Great War of 1914-18, when the dominance was becoming very obvious. Leaving the telegraph, the next major wave is, of course, the telephone service, which has now, in about a century, turned into a global voice transport service, and it's unnecessary to point out to you, but it's a wonderful service that works in any language without any adaptation of your terminals. It speaks Urdu, Hindi, Sami, Swedish, whatever you like. And it reached a global reach by about 1970, when we got the satellites that could straddle the oceans. It's not the beginning of it. I mean, the first Atlantic cable was done in the mid-50s, but the satellites brought massive capacity in there. The other major thing is the introduction of digital transmission, which for the first time made quality of the service independent of distance. Your kids can now call you from New Zealand. It sounds like next door. And in addition to that, vast capacity of the optical fibers in the 90s put an absolutely new development dimension to this. On top of that, we should not, of course, forget that the mobile telephone service has had a very rapid success, to the extent that now we have 1 billion fixed subscribers and 2 billion mobile subscribers after only 15 years. So all this implies a radical transit to the information societies, and there are two important points I wanted to underline. We've gone, as I've indicated, from scarce to abundant resources. And this is very radical. If you are old enough, you remember what a telephone call from the other side of the Atlantic meant in my childhood. And this has then prompted a paradigm shift from monopoly to pluralism. I mean, this abundant resource that has facilitated all the pluralism and the competition. And the other big thing is, of course, the digital technology, where computers and transmission have been integrated, and you can't separate transport and content anymore. They are inseparable. Mind you, when we started with telecoms, the telecom operators were exclusively forwarders. They never entered into the message, neither written nor voice messages. Now, when you buy something from an IT provider, it's largely an integrated thing. So the telecom side society gradually transits to an information society. I mean, these are long waves. So I mean, it's not a sort of by a fixed date, but I mean, the whole world is transiting. And in the new information society, we find the internet, which emerged as a set of interconnected private networks designed for closed user groups in the regulatory system of the day. The closed user groups was a sort of a notion with the administrations those days, and it was designed for information services, but alas, these days, it can even carry voice as a piggyback on top of it. And it was developed by non-traditional operators, so new public services emerged, or starting to emerge, about 10 years ago. Shall I say through the back door? At least it's viewed from the sort of the traditional telecom operator's point of view. And as the ITU is the telecom world's international forum, the ITU was not idle and has started to address internet issues starting about 10 years ago. And the first major conference doing this was ITU, being an international organization, works by major conferences, and they are called plenipotentiary conferences. The one in Minneapolis in 1998 saw two initiatives in this field. One was a Tunisian proposal to call or invite the UN to establish a world summit meeting on the information society, and that was endorsed by the conference. And this is now the famous WISIS, which you've heard zooming around here in Marcus Kummer's presentation in the morning, for one thing. And the other ITU decision in Minneapolis was to start internet activities inside the ITU through a few resolutions, and I'm not having time to go into the details here. We followed this up in the ITU once the WISIS had been established in the next plenipot, which was in Marrakesh in 2002, and we made inputs to the WISIS in areas of competence of the ITU, and those key competence areas were infrastructure, which the ITU has been all about for a long time, security, network security in particular, and enabling environment, which is UN speak for regular telecom regulations, or regulatory issues. That's called enabling environment in the WISIS world. The WISIS initiative, taken by the ITU, was then given to the UN, where the General Assembly in December 2001 accepted the idea, and the key words, the motto for the conference, is to bridge the digital gap in a global context, so it has a development focus. And it was decided to have the summit in two phases, which Marcus Kummer has also indicated in the morning. The first phase in Geneva in December 2003, and in Tunis in about a month's time. And also important is to note that it is a multi-stakeholder forum. It's not only for governments and their international organizations, but it is for the private sector and civil society as well. Although, as we have heard, it doesn't sit all that well. And the ITU, being the organization proposing the conference, has been nominated coordinator for the summit meeting, so it's deeply involved in the preparations and the running of it. I think I can skip what the ITU has been doing in the internet world, or at least what caught the ITU's interest, was addressing questions and tariff questions, but I'm anxious not to delve into the details, Mr. Chairman, so I'll skip that and just tell you what the first WISIS conference in Geneva did. It produced two outputs, a declaration of principles, a sort of solemn document. It had grown in ambition level from the original three areas that the ITU suggested to 11 sectors. And like the Swedish proposal, the government we discussed half an hour ago here, it covers almost all aspects of life because of the IT's information technology's thoroughgoing effects on society. And it had then a plan of action. I've seen said wide scope here, because a plan of action for all these sectors is, of course, a rather wide but also rather thin document. But lots of good ideas what countries and other stakeholders should do. Very good. The controversial points here was financing of investments and internet governance, which then turned into a hot spot in the summit. The next summit in a month's time is not yet completed, but it's supposed to provide a political document and an operational document on how the previous conference's ideas are to be implemented. And my conclusion, Mr. Chairman, is that the WISIS is a major UN event to promote this information society at global level. And I mean, it's the information society in its entire breadth and width. It's far more than just internet governance. But internet governance, yes, indeed, is a hot spot. It's a hot chestnut in this bag. And that's why it has, in this media world, of course, drawn a lot of attention. And secondly, the WISIS, being an ITU initiative, will, of course, also define the climate for the next meeting of the ITU, which is taking place in a year's time from now in Antalya in the fall of 2006. And my agency, the Post and Telecom Agency, being responsible for the ITU relations in this country, will be responsible for the preparations. And that's the end of the little pre-prepared speech, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Jörgen Samuelsson is my name, and I'm here partly because I'm the Swedish representative in GAC, which is the Governmental Advisory Committee to ICANN, and I've also been in the Swedish delegation during the PrepCom negotiations, and I will also be in Tunis. And the first remark I would like to make is that I consider the heading of the seminar a little indicating that this is an unfair trial, because I don't expect anyone to argue the UNIT UK's versus ICANN, actually. Perhaps somebody from the audience will make this a fair trial. My first line is this one, just to remember, to remind us of what the purpose of WISIS really was. And I when I read this, which is about a very beautiful statement, I fail to understand how we ended up quarreling about the domain name system. But I'm not to judge over other governments' priorities, of course. And I would skip, this is a multi-purpose presentation. I would skip through the things that Johan has already told you about. This was the mission given to the Working Group of Internet Governance. And they were not to negotiate, just to bring up some facts on the table. And they did on a lot of issues, maybe too many. This is some points here. I can operate under a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Department of Commerce. Most of you know that. ICANN board is made up of representatives from industry players, and governments participate through the GAC, and also the GAC chairman is part of the ICANN board. And I think the most important thing on this slide is the fourth bullet point, and this is one of the hot topics, the perception of some countries that internet resources that they depend upon are subject to unilateral American U.S. government action. And here I would just like to pinpoint the third bullet point, which is the U.S. principles on internet domain names and addressing system issued the 13th of June, which was just 3 days after the European Council has made their conclusions on the WISA subjects, and where they stated most importantly what we can see here in the third bullet point, that the United States will continue to provide oversight so that ICANN maintains its focus and meets its core technical missions. We can have a full day debate on what that means more specifically, but I'll leave it to that for now. I cannot resist expressing humble appreciation for the U.S. recognition of governments having a legitimate interest in the management of the CCTLD. I thank the United States for that. And a less sarcastic remark is the fourth one there, which I completely agree with, that dialogue should be kept also in the future, and not perhaps in one single fora, but in many different fora, because internet encompasses so many issues, and it's just hard to see one single fora to keep discussions on all of these. This is what the Working Group of Internet Governance did. Internet governance. Yeah, we have a Freudian slip here. Yeah. Absolutely. I haven't seen that before. Sorry. But it identifies four possible options for internet governance structure. And I suppose most of you know all these four models. None of them are completely satisfying. And number four, I find even scary. It's so many things and so much government involvement there. These are the core issues identified by the Council in its June meeting. I will browse quite quickly through these conclusions, because the important stuff reappears in the EU proposal from the PrepCom 3. But I think one of the most important thing to stress here is that what is underlined on this slide, the EU has never intent was never to replace existing mechanisms or institutions, and that you will find also in the later proposals. And there is a list in the conclusion of how things should be done, and this is the basic reason that is given in the Council conclusion. Because the governments have a specific mission and responsibility vis-à-vis their citizens. Because at the end of the day, if something goes wrong, people and companies will probably not care so much about the distributed end-to-end principles and the scattered decision-making of the internet. They will hold governments responsible. And then I think it's just fair for governments and the Swedish government to be able to show that they had some influence and they took up that responsibility within the given framework. And then we come to the EU proposal from the PrepCon 3 in Geneva. And first it said that some adjustments need to be made. And then when we go through this, we see basically the same thing again. And the important thing that I want to stress is that it should not replace existing mechanisms or institutions. And I think this is the part that has led to some stir, especially in the delegation of the United States. But what we try to say is that we want to be involved at the level of principles when it comes to public policy matters. The problem with the EU statement is that it's partly unclear and it's partly unfinished. Me and my equivalent counterparts in the 25 EU member states, we met for more than a year, quite extensively, tried to work something out. And we didn't. So we met for 2 hours in Geneva and came up with this. And things happen when 25 countries that have quite different views have to go home to their capitals and being able to read in their own position in the text. And this forum function, I think this is, well, maybe undiplomatic to say that, but probably just a talk job, but with some coordination. And we are quite specific that this forum function is something else, and it should not perform oversight tasks. Some people in the debate, I think, have mixed this quite heavily. And what the part that was really unfinished was this one. We said that we want to create a new forum, and also that we want to transition to a new model of international cooperation. So we did not want to create a new forum providing oversight task, which is the interpretation that some choose to make out of this. And again, now I'm coming to the specific Swedish approach in these matters. And again, this is also the EU approach, is also the Swedish approach. If something goes wrong, we cannot say, well, they seem to do such a good job, so we let them do it without any interest or interference. And what we had, yes, adjustments need to be made, and there have been several suggestions on the table. I'm not very impressed of basically any of them. Swedish approach, the point of departure is that the present public-private partnership works. It works well for the internet, and the main objective is the robustness and stability of the internet. But countries, and especially developing countries' participation capacity problems, needs to be overcome and solved. And the perception of political dependability on the United States has to be overcome. And internationalization of internet governance can be developed within the present system. We don't need a revolution, some kind of evolution perhaps. It doesn't necessarily mean transfer of current powers from the United States to other governments. Some options could be and a gradually increased independence of ICANN, which is the process that is going on already, initiated by the United States, could be coupled with enhanced GAC function. And I don't mean GAC enhanced in a formal sense, but enhanced in a way of resources so that we can make better advice to ICANN, more proper analysis before we make advice. Another part, a route could be an independent auditing of current practices, especially validation of changes in the rules on file, so that nobody has to see or interfere, but when it happens, but to be quite satisfied afterwards that everything followed the procedures that were published in advance. That's about 10 minutes. Swedish approach. Well, stability is the primary objective. Build on existing arrangement, technology-driven, innovation-driven, market-driven. But a negotiation is a negotiation is a negotiation. And as I said, when 25 countries meet and compromise, something happens with the text, and governments have responsibilities that other stakeholders just don't have. Thank you.
Well, first of all, it's great to be here, and thanks for inviting me. It's great to be on a mission to your native country, actually. So, and especially before it freezes over completely. So that's great, and I'm not going to show any yellow slides or anything, so we could perhaps raise the light level if we like, or otherwise you may fall asleep. Anyway, just a few comments from an ICANN, and perhaps also from my little perspective as a relative newcomer to ICANN, and the well, what you happen to see when you enter this rather new world from my previous experiences. So, a few comments on the headline, first of all, a little on the state of play, as it turns out, before Tunis, and a little more about ICANN, what it is and what it is not, and try to just illustrate some of the misconceptions that are plentiful around. But first of all, the headline, ITU versus ICANN. Well, wrong. It's great as a headline. It's like a football match, yes. So that's why you all came here, to see us fight it out. I don't know who I should fight against, but then it's fine as a headline, but actually what it's all about, it's on a meta level, above ITU and above ICANN. And the whole issue is whether and how much and the extent of government influences in ICANN. With one extreme then being that the same procedure and the same kind of governance that has applied for 150 years over the ITU should apply to ICANN or not. And that's where we have the main differences, and that's where I think the crux of the matter is. And as the recent developments in these negotiations have shown, well, there was, I would say, a major slip which is a cause of concern, and that was the recent statement from the European Union. Albeit that it may have been well intended to find some kind of compromise in a difficult situation where views were rather polarized, but it ended up being perceived as something which was going much too far into, well, let's call it the authoritarian regime camp, with Iran and Cuba applauding it. And that was a bit embarrassing, of course. And the United States being very, very reluctant to really believe their ears. But that's where we ended up, and there were a few more developments of it, and that's really where we have the little problem of today. Because one could say, and you could hear views in the community, well, in the wider community, that, all right, all well and fine, let it just result in an impasse. No agreement. And then we continue as before. But there are very major risks with that, and that in particular that there would be some kind of fragmentation and a new reappearance of these national borders coming up in an environment which we, which actually internet was brought about and managed to cross all these borders. And that's, of course, a mission of the internet. So, well, I think most would like to see a reasonable conclusion and a reasonable agreement. But the starting point, as it seems right now, is, well, rather difficult. Of course, there will be resolutions in other areas, but when it comes to internet governance, in the rather narrow sense that what ICANN is doing, and now I'm coming to a little of what ICANN is doing, because internet governance is much, much wider scope than this little mission that ICANN has got. And what is it? What do we do? Well, we groom the domain name system and see to that it works. Part of that is updating the root zone file. Yes, we do that. We also run one of the authoritative root servers, WAP, and we distribute IP addresses. And ICANN was conceived in, well, before 1998. It came into existence in 1998. And, well, the Rhesus and the RIGIG, well, they talk about it, they pay lip service to multi-stakeholder organizations. But ICANN is a true multi-stakeholder organization. It does exist already. It draws on all the communities in a, one could say, rather complex fashion, with a number of supporting organizations, advisory committees, and we, as ICANN staff, well, we are the servants of the masters, not the masters in the sense of a supra-governmental body or anything, but the masters in the sense of all the communities that are actually using the Internet and benefit from it. So that, how carefully it was crafted at the very beginning. Not only that, there's also automatic review built into the process. There are quite a few innovative concepts, I think, when it comes to governance that are already embodied in the ICANN bylaws, which, by the way, have changed quite a few times, which means that these review mechanisms actually work, and we evolve together with the development of the Internet. We're not averse to change, or rather, our masters are not averse to change. It follows that the servants are not averse to change either. And that particular change is an evolutionary process which is already underway since the beginning and which will continue. Now, just give two small examples. Where are we? Time-wise. Thank you. Okay. First of all, well, you noticed perhaps on Jürgen's slides that there were A, B, C, D, and E, the essential tasks. Two of them, I just mentioned two, are changes in the root zone file and distribution, policy for distribution of IP addresses. All right. Today, the U.S. government has oversight over the procedures we follow for changes in the root zone file. So, which means that they have the oversight to see that, all right, have you taken this step, and they can be quite meticulous in difficult cases where big changes are made. And that particular kind of review, yes, the U.S. Department of Commerce does that. We do have a memorandum of understanding which provides that if ICANN have instituted these procedures, and, well, there are a number of things which should be accomplished by September 2006, well, this kind of oversight should end. There is, I think this was the very first one, as another example, where we have the policy for distribution of IP addresses. Now, in that particular case, it is not an oversight in place from the U.S. government. So this would add to governmental oversight, if you like, if that was introduced. So you may understand that the U.S. is a bit reluctant to see the proposal from the EU side. And this is just one example. But how does that happen then? Well, IP addresses are dispatched from ICANN to the regional internet registries. There are five, one for Europe, one for Africa, one for Asia Pacific, one for South America and the Caribbean, and one for North America. They are distributed according to need, meaning that, well, let's put it like this. When you have disposed of or to the Internet services provider, which in turn distribute them to you as users, when they've used up something like 80% of these, 80% of these addresses, well, it's time they get a new batch of slash 8 or something. The policy for this is developed by the regional internet registries. It is a bottom-up procedure, which is then presented to the ICANN board, and then it stands as a global policy. Well, just to illustrate how the system works today. So ICANN is a multi-stakeholder organization governed by its constituencies and with a true bottom-up decision-making process, which is in place. So, and we're not averse to change, but, well, think before making dramatic changes. And if it isn't broke, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. Thank you very much.
Now it's Mr. Giovanni Sapia, who's head of Center and Center is the European organization that represents national copyright. And if you need a reference,
okay, first of all, I'd like to thank all of for the invitation to speak today. And now I should demonstrate that Italians are very punctual, which is not true, but I'll try to do my best. And first of all, what is sent? We are not a regional internet registry, or we do not locate IP addresses. We are just a not-for-profit organization. CENTRE is short for Council of European National Top-Level Domain Registries. We are a forum for country code top-level domains, but among our members there are also some generic top-level domains representatives. Our members come mainly from the European region, but we do also have members from other continents like Asia, like Africa, and so we have Afghanistan, Iran, Palestine, and others. So CENTRE is basically open to all top-level domain registries in the world. We do also have Canada, New Zealand, United States, and others. We have three categories of members, full members, associate members, and observers. And during the General Assemblies, the members vote on the admission of new members when we receive applications. This is the list of our members. The one in bold are the two last members that joined CENTRE, and they are the Vatican Holy See Registry and the Latvia Registry that joined CENTRE during the Moscow GA. We make a newsletter. Some copies of this newsletter can be made available to you after this meeting, and we intend to publish two issues a year of this newsletter. We also make surveys upon request of our members, like A-level survey covering the registries, the management main aspects, B survey that covers legal issues, and other surveys upon request of our members. We do also run an outreach program to help registries of developing countries to participate in the international fora and in training activities. In the international arena, we have the European Commission as an observer. In CENTRE, we keep regular contact with the IANA ICANN, and we also have an associate member of the European Internet Foundation that is a body made by European MPs in Brussels. We also have participated in the WikiGuizzes process, and we attend regularly almost all the international internet fora and meetings. CENTRE benefits of this such a wide and large participation because this participation brings into discussion, into the floor, different perspective, and we benefit from this such a different participation because sometimes it's useful to see the point of view of different culture to come to a final agreement on many aspects of the internet scenario. CENTRE and the internet governance. So we have participated in all the open consultations that were held in Geneva during the WIGIG, and that was quite, from my perspective, was quite good because it was quite an educational process in the sense that there, during the open consultations I attended, you could see the different views, the different approaches from different governments, different registries, different parties of the internet arena. We have released a final comment to the Working Group on Internet Governance final report, which was published on 15 August 2005. The key factors that we highlighted in this comment to the WIGIG final report are that we would like to underline once more the critical importance of the stability, security and robustness of the internet infrastructure, the principles of transparency, democracy, multi-stakeholder inclusiveness approach for any internet governance model, the subsidiarity, which is quite important both at European and international level, so that most of the actions that can be taken at international level can be better dealt at local level, and only in cases when this is not possible, in those cases there should be an intervention of other parties. The importance of an environment that encourages innovation and investment, the role of the private sector, and the importance of making existing mechanisms linked to key objectives. The working definition of internet governance, the WIGIG made, is that internet governance is not just internet names and addresses, and that we subscribe almost fully, because the domain name system is only a small part of the entirety of the internet governance issues. And according to the central comment to the final report we made, it should be clearer that governments, private sector and the civil society participate on an equal footing to shape the evolution and the use of the internet. So we would like really to reiterate that all the different stakeholders should participate on equal footing. The oversight function, ICANN should continue to be the forum, according to the central comment to the WIGIG final report, for cooperation for DNS issues as a service to the community. And ICANN should focus also on its core function of technical coordination, as well on improving inclusiveness in its processes. We do understand that ICANN is continuously evolving, and we appreciate that, and we have fully demonstrated several occasions our support for ICANN to continue in this development. The forum, that is one of the most critical elements in this WIGIG report, some members of Centre were quite perplexed, were a little bit, well, they didn't know what to say in reply to this forum proposal. And if a forum has to be created, the forum should only serve as a vehicle for exchange of concerns and ideas of various sectors, and make provision for the effective participation of all stakeholders, including non-governmental sectors from developing countries. So the forum be a good idea to better include the non-governmental sectors from developing countries in the internet dialogue and the internet arena. There is also the proposal in the WIGIG final report that the forum is complemented by regional bodies, and Sand pointed out that some regional bodies, Centre or others, already exist and that can be complementary to the forum. The proposed models, well, some critics have been expressed by Centre members to the proposed models. According to Centre, comment to the WIGIG final report, those models are too bureaucratic. Some of them fail to meet the WISIS criteria that call for full involvement of the private sector, civil society and international organizations, because sometimes, for instance, in some of the models that have been proposed, the private sector is limited to an observer role. So this is quite important for our members that should not be the way it is presented in some of these models. And they fail to address subsidiarity and the local determination principle. We should also distinguish, as a sort of conclusion, between those issues that may require restructuring of the present arrangements and those that can be and are expected to be resolved within the existing frameworks. And we should keep also in mind that most issues are local and regional and, as such, are best solved at national level. This is what our members, that are 40 country code top-level domains from different continent and regional geographical areas have highlighted during the process that led us to submit this comment. The future is that internet is based on a sort of free spirit And our main concern is that in any case an open and transparent dialogue so that all voices are continuously and always heard should be always kept in mind before taking any further step in the internet governance direction. My final comment is that in my hometown, which is a town on the coast of Tuscany, there is a famous fish soup, and everybody that wants to prepare this fish soup tries to put other ingredients in this fish soup, but sometimes the fish soup is already good as it is with the same ingredients, and you just have to improve the quantity of one or other ingredient to make it even taste better, but the ingredients are there. So I think more or less the internet the internet functioning is already here in front of us. We just have to improve some small elements, but all the main elements are already here. Thank you.
I hope. I would like to start off, I have no presentation, but I would like to pick up some of the issues which actually have been sort of on the table in the Geneva process to make it a little bit more understandable, because we are not talking about how possibly the technology works optimally. That's not the issue which is under discussion in this process which is going on internationally. I would like to start from the statement, which I think was repeated here by ICANN, saying that don't fix something that ain't broken. I think that has been one of the most provocative kind of statements in this process, because it is not perceived as actually that it's a system which is broken, first of all. Secondly, that there are a lot of countries, particularly, who are not happy with the present system. So the statement is very wrong, and it is a bit provocative versus those who have other ambitions. Because if one has the viewpoint of internet being sort of a common public good, which is essential for our... which is essential for all our societies, with the present situation in mind that actually quite a few in this world are not part of this sort of the world of the internet, but would need to be. And the whole thesis has been about how to bring in the rest of the world in being part of an information society. So a lot of these services which we are talking about and take for granted are not available to a lot of people outside the Western world. And that, of course, is a very important background to why this discussion has been raised. So if we consider sort of the internet as a system, whatever we mean by that, because different people mean different things, whether we mean the network or whether we mean access to information, or at least there is some kind of part which is a global public good that need to be shared. And it wouldn't be all that sort of far-fetched to say that it also needs to be managed in some kind of way which is shared by the world, including governments. Of course, the involvement of UN is a question, but UN is the body which we have internationally, and the UN system is the way within which we coordinate sort of ourselves in different areas. And it works better or worse, depending on the participation and depending on the role we give, actually, that particular UN part of the system which is supposed to take care of this. And it's not a question of pro or against ITU either, because I think that ITU has a role to play, but it still remains to see, I mean, what role will it be pursuing in future. So there are different options of the involvement of the UN system, of course. There is, of course, this particular difficulty in terms of, from a UN perspective, in dealing with the issue of internet, because it is a very decentralized system. There is something central which sort of keeps it together, the root zone, with sort of a root system, which is a sort of centralized, but basically it works in a very decentralized way. And it also also works in a very different way from many of the issues, other issues which are on the UN table, namely about the that we have a special role of the private sector, and we have a sort of civil society organizations playing a major role in its existence and development and so forth. So it is a very new kind of issue from that point of view. I think the discussions have been very much in Geneva have very much been based on a political kind of standpoint. And whichever issue you bring up on a global scene is actually going to somehow show what kind of trust exists between different partners in the world. And let's put it very straightforwardly. U.S. is not only perceived, but has somehow an ultimate control of this system. And there is in the world a major distrust of U.S. Whether we like it or not, it exists. And we can speculate in if it has been increased. I think it has been increasing. I think it has become much worse. And of course, the Iraq war is one of the, maybe the triggering kind of actions of the U.S. Government. But there's another aspect on U.S. government as well, and that is the anti-UN kind of attitude that the U.S. has been showing in many different ways, and you have seen it in the media in very many different ways. And this is sort of a scenario, sort of at the background to within the sort of the system or the negotiations which are taking place. So it is a question of trust or mistrust. So one has to bear in mind that when one brings something up on a global scene like this, you do get the reflection of the level of trust or distrust that exists in the world between countries and blocs. So I think that is extremely important. Another aspect which I think is also important on the global scene is that we have actually quite a few big countries with a lot of huge populations and growing economies, like Brazil, India, China, of course, to some extent South Africa also, who want to play a different role in the international affairs. And they don't accept anymore to be sort of told what to do and how to do it and so forth by the West. So they want to see themselves as being sort of major actors on the scene to play a certain role. And of course that's another sort of aspect in this on this international scene, which sort of plays an important role when it comes to who wants what. So more control. And sharing of power, of course, is sort of evident in this field. To sum up this, there is a need for having a process where one needs to show that one from the point of view of that this is actually something we commonly need to share, which then allows all the different all governments also to feel that they are somehow sharing this common public good, and they have a say in how it's run and so forth. So some kind of joint ownership of the internet has to be the result of this process. But of course, without jeopardizing the present sort of efficiency of the system. But dealing with the common issues, and we let's not forget that we do actually have quite a few things which are not dealt with, like spam and a lot of security issues, for instance, in the system, which are not really dealt with properly. And of course, the problem is that national legislation is not capable of dealing with a lot of these issues because they are cross-border kind of activities and so forth. So some kind of sort of international or global system which deals with those things which national legislation systems are not capable of dealing with is needed. That I think we know. There has been a long process within which, a long period of time within which this has been discussed. And I think that it has actually been a very interesting learning process because theoretically, maybe also developing countries are have the possibility of taking part in decision making, in theory. It's exactly actually like trade issues. We say, okay, free trade means that everybody is able to trade jointly. But if you don't have the means of doing that, actually it doesn't work. So that's a certain discrepancy between theory and practice. The same goes for this. So even though all these sort of forums exist, the possibility of developing countries to participate in those is very, very limited because of their lack of capacity and human capacity quite often. So to that, from that point of view, this of course is part of the development process and the lack of development in those parts of the world. And of course this affects the way of their perceptions, but also how the system can be set up in order to cater for them, their needs as well. So I would like to end up by saying that, yes, it's quite a lot a question of perceptions, and that those have to be dealt with. And I think perceptions can be dealt with in a process, but it's also, to quite some extent, a question of trust, and to build that capacity in the developing world to take part in those forums, whichever they are, to be created.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just have a few comments to say. First of all, I'm also, just like Curtis in the background, we also in the back, we're also a member of the Internet Architecture Board, and I would like to correct what Ole said about the policy about IP address allocation, because the policy of IP address allocation is set by the IETF, and the IAB control what policy rules for IP address allocation in a contract in an MOU between ICANN and the IETF. So that was like the first thing. So ICANN and the process that is going on today doesn't have anything today to do with IP address allocation. That's something that is an IETF issue. Secondly, regarding root-zone editing, what is happening today is that the request for a change in the root zone is sent to IANA, which is part of ICANN. That request is then processed according to a workflow inside IANA that is currently discussed quite heavily in the community on what the various steps are, and the final changes the final changes to be made are then approved, just like Ole said, by Department of Commerce. But the editing of the root zone is not done by IANA today. That is also something that is discussed today, whether IANA should do the editing, IANA ICANN should do the editing, or whether it should stay like today. So where the actual editing should be done is also one of those things that is to be discussed. So one thing that I think is missing in this whole discussion are more precise identification of who is actually responsible for what. And just talking about the U.S. government, for example, lowering their control over the Internet, it's like if the U.S. government do have the key to the room where the big red switch is, which someone can switch off. Instead, it is the case that many countries, including the United States, of course have interest of being able to, for example, know what would happen if it is the case that the current registry of the CCTLD go poof, or if it is the case that there is a dispute inside the country of who is going to take care of that domain. And, of course, different countries have different opinion whether that should be handled by local law in the country or whether that should be handled on a global basis. But if you try to identify those kind of things which I can actually do take care of, which, as I said, doesn't include IP addresses, for example, there are actually quite few things from my point of view that actually are international things that should or could fall under international dispute or what we actually have to discuss globally. So to be able to move forward, I think it's very, very important to identify what those very few things are and try to identify where to take care of them. Because the current situation in the business process, which I've seen, I'm pretty disappointed of where we are today, because a lot of the things that are discussed are not even close to be as precise as it was in 1998 when the U.S. government released the white paper when they took over the contract from the National Science Foundation. So I would like to see more precise discussions on what actually is to be done, else we will not be able to move back to even where we were in 1998. Thank you.
Thank you. One question for you. Who should carry out those discussions?
I think I claim that there is no need to actually have discussions on what processes to be able. Okay, let me take a step back. My hope when the visas process started was that the outcome of the visas process very early should be a list of issues that should be resolved on the international level. And after that, the rest of the visas process up until Tunis should be a resolution and conclusion on where those international disputes should be handled. Where we are today, what I see is close to be the result of Tunis is a forum or a group where it should be discussed what things should be handled on the international level, which from my point of view was the goal from the beginning of the visas process. So I don't really know what the visas process have added instead of like adding more people in this learning process that want to understand what's happening.
Thank you. That was very illuminating. Is there anyone in the panel who would like to answer to that immediately?
A very, very quick response, but this is about IPv6 addressing and policy for that. Because, of course, you're right. And, of course, I made a very, very short summary of it from the ICANN perspective, because this is multi-layered. And what we perceive is actually we do have an MOU in turn with the regional internet registries. And when it comes to the allocation from IANA to the regional internet registries, that is something that is presented from the RIRs. So, I mean, you're just confirming my point about this being a bottom-up process. So that's just on that particular point.
Thank you. Now I'd like to ask, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to put in another first question, or should I use my prerogative as chairman to do so? Well, Kerry.
Okay. Another aspect of all of this that gets into something that ICANN should be doing or is doing that hasn't been mentioned. 2 years ago at its general conference, October 2003, UNESCO passed a recommendation concerning the promotion and use of multilingualism and universal access to cyberspace. And one of the sections in this document says, and I quote, "Member states and international organizations should promote appropriate partnerships in the management of domain names, including multilingual domain names." Now, I represent one of the NGOs, or rather, at the UNESCO conference held this year. It's actually, I think it just ended, in fact. I was there for 8 of the 20-something days. Representing one of the NGOs that maintains formal relations with UNESCO in their Commission 5, which addresses precisely the material that I'm referring to here. And the NGOs have all been looking forward to participating in the WISIS process, effectuating new dimensions in the interaction between the various governments that have interests in all of this. And sadly, one of the outcomes of that meeting, as a direct result of the PrepCom in Geneva a couple of weeks ago, was that the one NGO after the other was simply canceling its plans to be in Tunis. And there's a part two to my remarks, but I wonder if anybody would be interested in commenting on that. Marcus Kummer's presentation this morning started out with a very, very compelling exposition of this inclusive aspect of the exercise, that civil society, everybody, so civil society through to government would be represented. But right now, at least the NGOs that participate in the UNESCO conference have no sense of there being any meaningfulness in their proceeding with their plans to be in Tunis, and as I say, are canceling their delegations. How come isn't that kind of sad?
I think, Astrid, that is a question for you.
Yes, I mean, your question was, is it sad? Yes, it's sad. All through the WISIS process, we have had this problem of, and I indicated that to some extent by saying that the UN system is not used to dealing with issues where other stakeholders, except for governments, have a major role to play. Let's face it, that's the situation. And I think that the WIGIG has actually been perceived by both non-civil society organizations and by private sector as being a very good example of that you do have a process within which different stakeholders can act on sort of the same footing. But when it brings back its results to the UN system, we are back to the normal UN procedures, which means that all negotiations are only between governments. And we have had, I mean, from the Western world and from the EU, we have strongly tried to push all the time, I mean, this aspect of, just because of the fact that actually, particularly internet, is so vital, and the participation by the other stakeholders is so vital, that there is a need for finding it this way, some kind of platform within which it can be discussed without. But this is a problem, I mean, and I just can be very frank, I mean, in the sense saying, yes, this is a major problem, and that we have to continue to struggle to see to it that civil society organizations and private sector have the possibility of actually affecting what is what the outcome is. And I think we will not be able to resolve the full participation, but at least there are quite a few of us in the Western world who are pushing for it. And I would say also to some extent some developing countries. But to quite some extent this is sort of a north-south kind of divide in terms of how to rule things.
Astrid, may I just be provocative as a following up to your question? Why should those of us who sort of like the as it is put our faith in an organization that throw out our representatives?
Well, that's a very good question, because, I mean, there is one simple answer to that, and that is that on the international level, we only have the UN, and the UN is not more efficient and doesn't work better than what actually the member states allow it to do.
But my response to that is that ICAN works.
Yes, but I mean, that is not the issue. I mean, if you look at the international, the global issues, they have to be dealt on globally. And if ICANN is not perceived as fully sort of reflecting, let's say, the global scene, which I think is the case, and that is the background to the discussions, this is actually what happens, you do have. So, I mean, I can understand your question and your view and agree with that, but this is actually not the perception of the partners in among government representatives in Geneva.
Do you have a quick one, or could I go?
The resolution that I quoted was in fact enacted by UNESCO member states, which I believe is just straight down in succession from the UN, rendering the domain name system a truly multilingual, a truly global resource is very important to many of the NGOs. We are engaging actively in dialogue about this with ICANN. We had hoped to be able to engage in active dialogue about this with the WISIS participants. And do I understand correctly that that is an incorrect perception, that this is one of the things that we should proceed with ICANN to discuss, because that's the only forum available to us?
Well, I think there are different forums available to you. I think UNESCO is one, because if one looks at the different action lines from the Geneva documents, you see that actually the question of culture, including multilingualism, which has been debated extensively, I would say, in the WISIS process, is actually something that UNESCO should be seeing to it that it gets through and uses its own. So let's not somehow confuse that all the issues are dealt with within the WISIS process. I mean, there is something which happens beyond the WISIS, and where the different UN agencies have to continue their work within the different fields, including multilingualism, which is a UNESCO kind of issue. So I don't think it's ruled out. So I think that kind of influence can be continued within the forthcoming process as well.
Just a quick response, Johan, or...
Just to add that multilingual domain names is on ITU's work program. This is one of the areas, as ITU has been dealing with addressing since the birth of telecommunications. Of course, addressing in the new world is a question of interest, and there are resolutions on that point. I'm not so close to it that I can readily tell you exactly the state of the art, but it's not only a UNESCO question, it's an ITU question. That's my message. Thank you.
And very high on the agenda for ICANN, where we have just recently revised our IDN, internationalized domain name guidelines, and working flat out to see to the resurgence of internationalized domain names, both on the second level and on the top level.
No, next question.
I have more sort of an observation. It might be a question for all of you. I've only been following the internet governance part of the business debate, and business about this of course contains a lot more issues, which is as important. But there is two things that strikes me, and maybe this is my engineering background that hurts me a bit here. But I always believed in defining the problem before you work on a solution. And the business problem, you know, the internet governance part of this is certainly seems to have a very vague problem statement. And if you listen to the arguments that are being brought up, there's basically two. One is saying that the governments are afraid of the U.S. control over the editing function of the root zone, which is not a governance problem. That's actually a process problem. Someone has to define the rules, and someone follow the rules. And as far as I know, in the VSS process, no one has ever discussed or dared to bring up the fact that the intended outcome of the VSS process or the governance question is to actually change the rules, or at least define them in one way or the other compared to us now. Basically, someone has to define who has the right to a certain top-level domain, who can go and claim ownership of that top-level domain, and what are the rules behind defining who has that right. That's a pretty tricky question, because there are countries like Taiwan, if that's a country or not, we can have a long discussion about, but it's and it's certainly not my topic, but it's certainly a very interesting question, because someone will have to deal with this, someone will have to write this down and define it. At the same time, we also have the other argument that's being brought up is the distribution of scarce resources, basically IP address numbers. IP address is a very interesting phenomenon because it's actually a structured, hierarchical, limited resource as opposed to anything else the ITU has dealt with, like phone numbers, which are not as hierarchical, and they're certainly not distributed. They're distributed in a different way, and they're not limited. This is something. Delegating the authority of these questions are actually fairly complex because there is no known way within science to do the allocation in any other way that we do today. But still, we want to change this. And if you see an example, for example, Milton Miller's paper or the proposal by Director Shaw at the ITU, it was actually said that they were nice proposals, but they're actually proven not to work. So again, there are some very complex issues behind this that's been completely, more or less, as far as I know, ignored in the business process. I wonder if you have any comments on those two questions.
Who would you like to comment?
Take your pick.
Well, yes, and back again to the IP addresses. And chopping it up along national borders is, well, risked being A, a serious case of mismanagement, B, reinforcing or rather provoking fragmentation. So, well, just couldn't agree more, actually, what you said.
Anyone else would care to comment? Jürgen?
Well, thank you. I can only agree as well. What the EU and what Sweden would like to see is only to set some very guiding principles on a very principle level, and that is the only thing we're talking about. ICANN is always saying we don't make public policy, and the only thing government says that we make public policy. So we can only find language there. I think we can reach a conclusion at the end of the day, which fits all, basically.
Yeah. Just a comment on phone numbers. If I understood you correctly, you said that phone numbers are unlimited. Well, that's not quite true in my mind. I mean, the ITU sets country codes, and they are 2 or 3 digit country codes, so they are certainly a limited space there, unless you extend the sort of the whole world's phone system by adding another digit to a country number. I know. The local phone numbers are a finite space until you extend the length of the numbers by 1 digit or 2 digits or more. But the international name number space is 2 or 3 digit numbers. So that's a limited space at the present, unless you extend it.
Jürgen, I have a question for you. And in your presentation, the Swedish government took a very sort of hesitant and careful position. And that makes me wonder, why isn't GAC enough, according to sort of the Swedish reasoning?
Well, I don't think I have said that GAC is not enough. I think I said that enhanced GAC could be one option to go. Because the way we can influence ICANN is not by having more formal power, especially on the day-to-day technical things, which I think IB addressing is one good example of. I think the way for GAC is to have a better resource secretariat that can provide the analysis, identify one of the problems that would appear on Patrick's list, and try to point out where to solve it. And I actually has given that message quite clearly in the informal internet group within the European Union, that we have to have proper analysis of specific problems before we go forward and grasp for power without really knowing what to do with it.
So in a sense, you could say that the Swedish government is a fan of the Tuscany fish soup.
Sort of. I haven't tasted it, but it sounded delicious.
Thank you. Anyone in the audience? Tell.
Don't pull too hard, because then I'm coming.
Okay. My name is Tell Hermansen. I'm representing the International Chamber of Commerce, ICC. I want to follow up on Ola's last comment, and that is the... what is the Swedish government's position here? I see Olof Nordling started out saying that it was not such a big thing between ITU and ICANN, but it seems like it's a big gap between the Ministry for Industry and the Ministry for Foreign Affairs. You stressed robustness, transparency, and so forth, whereas Astrid immediately took the UN track and asked them to take on other assignments. What is the Swedish government position in the negotiations?
I will try and start, and I think Astrid would like to add a comment as well, I guess. I think that the Ministry of Industry has more insight into the technical problems, and what I give you is perhaps the sort of solutions in the technical field. Astrid is giving the overview over this. I mean, this is about trust or mistrust about the United States. This is about difficulties for United developing countries to participate. Yes, ICANN is a very free organization. It doesn't kick anyone out. But if a developing country doesn't have the capacity to participate, they might turn to the UN. Maybe you would like to add something.
Well, I think that, I mean, you always, of course, look for the way forward. And I think that one way forward, which is important, and that's why I think this process is so important, because it's a learning exercise for a lot of particular developing countries to sort out what actually are problems and what is then sort of just perceptions on and sort of, let's say, a power game which needs to be, which is played and needs to be handled as such. To sort out those particular problems with actually where possibly developing countries do have sort of criticism which is has to be dealt with. I think that is the process which is quite important, and this is my hope that the discussions, this process, which I think will go far beyond WISIS, I don't think WISIS really will solve any of these issues, needs to be somehow brought forward. I think there is also quite a lot of symbolism which is required, you know, in ways, in dealing with negotiations and finding ways out of deadlocks, you know, you have to make sometimes sort of symbolic kind of changes. And if you want to see, for instance, GAC being sort of the organization within which discussions are taking place, and maybe renaming, you know, these kind of things, they sound to most people quite ridiculous often, because you may, but symbolically they may play a major role in terms of actually symbolizing that there is a change made. So don't underestimate the need for actually not necessarily bringing completely new structures to run the system, but rather to see to it how do you see to it that you deal with those particular problems which people evidently have, and then deal with the political side and make some sort of concessions on symbolic levels. I don't exactly know what that means, but I mean, coming to the question also, I mean, to define the problem before you start the solution, I mean, this is, I think, the answer I could give to that, but I'm not surprised after working with WISIS. WISIS started off, as I recall it, as a very technical kind of exercise. It very quickly turned out to move over to I think, sort of a developmental discussion about the digital divide and what, why the developing countries were not part of this process. So I think that this is what happens. You start from one end and you end up somewhere entirely different.
I do not agree with you at all. First of all, I think it's very scary if it is the case that, that we hear from the Swedish government, from you, that this is a learning process. Because if this is a learning process and everyone is discussing and learning before they are actually, before we are moving forward, then we will just sit here and nothing will happen. Secondly, regarding developing countries, that's something that was discussed already long before the visas process in a dialogue between, among others, the then-to-be ICANN and ITUD. And ITUD created a separate process how to take care of the developing countries, among other things, together with ISOC. And that process started to work, and then suddenly the visas process started, and the countries that that wanted to move things to the ITU, with only, where only governments can make decisions and not companies, as you know, those countries were running around and trying to gather votes from development countries that were taken care of by the ITUD, and the visas process, like after a while started, was initiated by the chairman of the ITU, of the United Nations. Everyone hopes whenever one of these processes starts, and I think I can count to you, this as being the third, we really would like to move forward. And I'm a little bit nervous not hearing from you any interest or suggestion on how to move forward, because what I've heard from you a couple of times now is that this is a learning process. So what is your suggestion on how to move forward?
Okay, when I talk about the learning process, I think it's a learning process for those who are not aware of how internet works. And I don't talk about the learning process for Sweden. Because, I mean, the attitude from the EU countries, actually, and from most of the Western world has been exactly what was quoted here earlier, that something which is not broken ain't needed to be fixed. Which means that it's not the problem of the Western world, it's the problem of the rest of the world. And in negotiations, I just have to sort of again point out that I'm not particularly suggesting any solution. But what I'm saying is that in international negotiations, you actually have to consider what other countries and blocs are doing or saying, and their views, whether they are based on perceptions or true facts. You have to consider that. That's the only way you get forward on a global level. And that's what you have to do when you discuss these issues. When I say the process, and I don't understand how you could say that a learning process would be somehow dangerous, because I would say, on the contrary, if everybody learns how an efficient internet needs to work, I think we have gained something. And that's what I hope from this process, which the WIGIG started off and which will continue far beyond WISIS.
Thank you. I'm just about to summarize now, so if there's anyone else who would like to put a question to the panel, please do so or indicate that you want to do it. Right.
We have heard a lot about how the UN system is trying to grasp the new phenomenon here, the internet. What about the Swedish position when it comes to transforming the ITU to make that work more in an internet world?
You are being a senior ITU specialist.
I indicated in my presentation that that's will have to be addressed in the wake of the second WISIS conference that's coming up now in November. I think everybody in the ITU is right now holding back and waiting for the outcome of the WISIS before formulating proposals. But I've been part of the reform process in the ITU since the plenipot in Nice in 1989. So I do respect the difficulty in changing such a large organization with such a complicated rule book. We've been at it for the last 15 years. We are still at it, but it's a burdensome process. But that's the difficulty with heritage.
Isn't that exactly one of the problems here? During the last 15 years, the internet has turned into being something which is of government importance, and at the same time, We see that ITU is now trying to struggle with its internal processes. I think this is one of the things that the panel has not touched, actually.
One thing that we have perceived as a problem for the ITU is that the transit from the monopoly to the pluralistic society has meant that the three sectors of the ITU, which is frequency management, standardization, and development assistance, have moved apart. The foot points in the member states have moved apart. So my agency, the Post and Telecom Agency, is definitely responsible for frequency management in this country. Standardization has largely gone to industry, and development assistance is a mandate from, well, Astrid reminds us of the finesse in the Swedish development policies, that it's perhaps everybody's responsibility to take care of development questions. But above all, as far as I know, the SIDA is the agency that that deals with development questions in this country. So it's a tripod where the feet are sliding apart, and that's part of the institutional problem for the ITU. And we've been working on that through the 90s.
Thank you. I'm about to sum up now. But I'd first like to say that about 3 years ago, I received an email stating something like this. Why isn't Sweden more aware of the VESIS process? Why isn't the sort of private sector in Sweden participating in the debate around VESIS? And the sender of that email was Astrid Duvberg. Thank you, Astrid. That's 3 years ago now. And this matter, problem, baby, choose your pick, has been very quiet since. It hasn't been a matter for sort of a broader private audience, private sector comprising of both sort of enterprises and non-governmental organizations, human rights organizations, freedom of speech organizations. It's just very lately developed into an issue where such things are debated. And having listened to you, I'm wondering about the headline on this seminar. Someone commented that it's unfair to say the UN versus ICANN. And I tend to agree. It seems like some countries are using ICANN as a bat against the US. Is that a correct interpretation? And that concerns me even more, because where is the internet? You know, why represent an organization that deals with internet issues? We are promoting the internet, and the functioning of internet is, maybe it's not perfect, but it's at least functioning at present, and of course it can be improved. But making it into a third world issue is something that I'm not quite certain that I agree with. Of course, we need to bring in the third world countries into sort of the possibilities and opportunities that the internet present, but that is a question of accessibility to or access to the internet. So why change the internet if that is the goal or the objective of this exercise? I've had some arguments here today that makes me I need to contemplate a bit on what I've heard, because I think I'm more scared today than I was yesterday. And having said that, is there anyone in the panel who would like to add something to me, to hit me over the head with a bat, maybe?
Whether you're welcome to the VESIS process or the, ITU and so on, I don't know, but everybody is very welcome to the next ICANN meeting, which takes place in Vancouver, and there will, well, within short, be something that's closer as well in Morocco. So, mind you, ICANN is open participation. And, you make it what it is. Thank you.
Now, that was the final call. Unless
a minor comment, Olaf. I indicated that the ITU has a development sector that was alluded to in your comments. And that's one of the strong points, I think, of the ITU, is bringing knowledge to the third world through seminars regionally or locally. And you can go into the ITU's homepage and see what they're doing. But bringing exactly what Astrid is talking about, bringing understanding to the less knowing countries of the world is at least one of the chief objectives of the ITU, which we do not mind so much about because we do not feel that we are on the receiving end. But this is an important sector in the ITU seen from the third world. Thank you.
I'd like to say that the internet is an opportunity for those countries to actually participate and move ahead. Rather, so that is not an internet issue. Giovanni.
Apart from inviting all of you in Tuscany to taste the famous fish soup, so you can make the comparison with the internet history or something like that, just wanted to show you those copies of our newsletter that is published twice a year, so you can have a copy if you're interested. And there are some interesting articles also regarding the visa switching process. Thank you.
Could I just add one aspect? I think, Olof, you have actually reasons for being scared, because I share that. Because we do know that there are a lot of countries who want to control, use internet to further control their citizens. And that's a very scary kind of picture. And I think that is why there is such a great need, actually, for everybody to take part in this and see into it and focusing on, actually, what is it that maybe certain countries would like to, and why is it that they want to do this and that, and to focus on that and debate that more openly. I think that's the only way out of it. But actually, it is quite scaring that you are more and more able to control your citizens if you actually do what certain countries, maybe China is doing at the moment. So I think there are quite some reasons for being scared.
Thank you. And now Marcus Kummer, as the source of everything. Here's the
final point. I wouldn't go as far as that, but I was going to be quiet, but then I thought, well, now I feel compelled to say, after all, a few things. I certainly would take issue as well with the title, ITU versus I, and I think we have left that behind us. It was the issue 2 years ago, but I think the process we have been through has shifted the attention, and ICANN, by and large, is not the focus of the debate. Institutional surrounding of ICANN, the relationship of ICANN to one or all. Astrid's comments about the learning process, I think I would go even further than that. I think it's a learning process. It is a learning process on as well, I would say, between those who have been in charge of running the internet, between governments. It's the beginning of a dialogue. The internet now is so big, I think those who have been running the internet have to take it as a big compliment that the world of governments is now interested. And it was Bob Kahn himself who mentioned that to me, that for him, when he attended the summit in 2003, it was, he said, to him, interest in his baby. So I would end on a more optimistic note and take away the fears. Yes, of course, things can be wrong, but I think I trust that those who care about the internet and governments who care about the internet will make sure that things will not go wrong. And I think the result of this, in one way or another, will be a continuation of the dialogue. As already the US has indicated, there are some small differences as to how this should take place, but I think, and I'm confident that this will take place and we will carry on discussing this issue. And a last word as a comment to what Patrick says, I fully understand in a way the frustration coming from an insider that he sees that we are less far advanced than we were in 1998 when setting up ICANN, but then that was a dialogue in. It has moved the scale, and we have to compare with apples and pears with pears, and there we have to compare where we are now to where we were in 2003, and I think there collectively we have made progress. I would say there's still a slight disagreement whether the world is a a disk or a globe. I think we don't quite agree on all the facts yet, but the debate is certainly on a higher level of knowledge than it was 2 years ago. And people now accept that the security and stability of the internet is of paramount importance. They accept that governments have no role in the day-to-day management of the internet, and I think that clearly is a progress. So there is hope.
Thanks, and on that note, we leave.